Nice to see you all. Welcome, great. So there was a mother in the Guangdong province of China who was very excited because she was going to visit her daughter, her married daughter, for the first time in that married daughter's home. She made the long journey. And when she arrived, it turned out that it was just the women home. The men had all gone off. And that was lovely. That meant that she would have dinner with her daughter and her mother, the mother-in-law, and herself. Well, they sat down for the evening meal, and they just hadn't even begun when suddenly the lights went out. The daughter said, no, it was the mother-in-law who said, I will go and fix the lights. And then the mother heard a rustle of fabric disappearing off into another room to hit the fuse box or something. And she thought, oh, this is a perfect opportunity for me to remind my daughter of etiquette. And so she said to her daughter, you know, don't you, that it's very important that you give your guest the largest portion. You can do that by turning the platter towards your guest with the biggest piece of meat and the crispest vegetables and the thickest pastry. And then she sighed a little sigh, maybe to accentuate her tiredness from the journey. And she said, it's especially important when your guest has traveled far. The lights came on just then. And to her horror, she realized the mother-in-law wasn't the one to go and fix the lights. It was her daughter. She'd been saying all this to the mother-in-law, but she was a quick thinker. She said, I have a strange affliction. Whenever the lights suddenly go out in a room, complete nonsense comes out of my mouth. I have no control. And the mother-in-law said, I understand completely. I too have a strange affliction. Whenever the lights go out, I go stone deaf. Well, the daughter didn't really understand what was going on, but she had a feeling it would be a good evening. And you know, it was. She did, as she had always been coached to do ever since the time she was small. She turned the platter with the biggest portion towards the guest, who was her mother. And then her mother did something that surprised her very much. Her mother said, No. Your mother-in-law is such a generous and compassionate person. I think you should give it to her. And that's how it goes often, isn't it? I think kindness is a little bit like a seed. When you plant it, more kindness grows. And I know many of you are kind people, but I would like to just bring forward one person in particular who seems to have disappeared from my sight. There she is, who is a kind person. And she has accepted the job as program assistant for the children's program, and we're so happy.
Let us summon the spirit of life in song, then share a full minute of silence. If you carry within you joy, peace, gratitude, may you allow yourself the time to revel in it, soak it in. If you carry within you sorrow, may you find comfort. If you carry worry, may you find peace. If you carry fear, may you find strength. May each of you find what you need to live as the you that you long to be. May you feel the power of your own capacity to offer this world your loving care. With gratitude for the gift of you within our congregation and within our world, I say blessed be and amen. Long ago, before Quicken, before you could pay your bills online, my mother taught me how to make and maintain a budget. I recently came across one of my little budget notebooks from that era. Each page had a different category of expenses: food, clothes, phone bill, drugstore, etc. Each time I got a paycheck, I divided the money up and added a portion into each of the different categories. Each time I bought something, I subtracted it from the appropriate category. I literally tracked every penny. I had a friend who used to tease me. He tried to give me pennies. No, then I had to write it in my budget. No surprise, even years later, I am still the penny pincher in our family. It takes me forever to grocery shop. I stand there in front of the shelf with my cell phone calculator. Let's see, I could get the 140-gram container of grated Parmesan cheese that's on sale for $5.49. That's 3.92 cents per gram. Or I could get the larger 170-gram bag of grated Parmesan for $6.99, that's 4.11 cents per gram. Aha! Usually the bigger one is cheaper per unit, but that little one was on sale, so in this case, the little one is cheaper. This is why I check. Even once I determine which item is the best buy, I have to weigh whether it is worth it to pay more to get a brand name. It depends on the product. Yes for Cheerios, but no for ibuprofen. I'm never quite sure about dish soap. And is it worth it to pay more for the eco and organic products? I say yes for milk, but no for bananas. But what about carrots? This is why Shauna does the grocery shopping. She's much more efficient. In addition to penny pinching, I am a little bit of a hoarder as well. Witness the fact that I still have this 15-year-old. I love getting free stuff, especially brand new free stuff. I am a fool for a free tote bag, and I grin with genuine pleasure when a charity that we support gives us a set of blank greeting cards. Save the Children makes especially nice ones. And this is embarrassing but true. I am one of those people who returns from conferences with luggage full of those little bottles of hotel toiletries. You know, if you put them away each night, housekeeping replaces them each morning. A 4-day conference can really add up. I once considered writing a sermon and calling it Hoarding Hotel Hand Cream and Other Misdemeanors of Fear. Because this is the thing, the hoarding, the penny pinching. There is an unpleasant sense of anxiety underlying it all. I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of people feel anxious about money in one way or another. This month, we've been focusing on open-hearted ways, the spiritual practice of opening our hearts. I find that thinking about money often makes us close our hearts in anxiety or fear, also in envy or guilt. I remember the first time I realized that one can feel both envious and guilty about money. I was with a bunch of neighborhood kids, and they were talking about who was most spoiled. Maybe you know this conversation. So-and-so got so many presents for her birthday, and her mom just got her that new limited edition Lego set for no reason. It wasn't a holiday or anything. She is so spoiled. The kids were holding up different examples of who was most spoiled. And then, somehow, the conversation flip-flopped. And all of a sudden, the kids were bragging about their possessions. I have that Lego set and the minifigures that you can get separately to go with it. When I came home, I told my mom how baffled I was by the whole thing. First, they were talking as if having a lot of stuff was a bad thing, and then they were talking as if having a lot of stuff was a good thing. Adults experience this as well, though perhaps more subtly. Most of us have fewer material possessions than some, and more material possessions than others. So it is possible when comparing oneself with those who have more to feel envious. Gosh, I wish I could afford that vacation. And then a moment later, when comparing ourselves with those who have less, we can feel guilty. Perhaps we read a news story about refugee families who have no home at all, let alone great vacation plans. When our daughter was about 3, I remember talking to a friend of mine who had just spent time in India. She described how the kids that she met where she worked were lucky to have one toy. And what a contrast it was when she visited her friends in the States whose kids had so many toys, they literally did not have a place to put them all. I was one of those friends. Our daughter did indeed have shelves and bins overflowing with stuff. I felt a stinging pang of guilt. Guilt, envy, anxiety. So many uncomfortable feelings swirling around when we talk about money, all of them heart-closing. How can we feel better about money? How can we think about money in open-hearted ways? There's one technique that works wonders for me. When I was in graduate school, I got the best bit of advice about money I have ever received. The financial aid dean was talking to our class of incoming students, and he said this: live off of 80% of your income, save 10%, and give away 10%. Side note, you can do the calculations based on gross or net income, it doesn't matter.
I do the less ambitious after-tax plan. I pay the taxes first, and then I calculate the 80-10-10 based on what's left. We have youth sitting in our service today, and this bit of advice is easiest to implement when you start young, so I want to make sure that they hear this. You listening? Hi. Welcome. Okay. Write this down as, I'm not kidding, as a money-managing technique to consider. Live off of 80%, save 10%, and give away 10%. Try it and see what you think. I started living this way when I was a student, and I continued when I got my first real job. I essentially acted as if my income was 80% of what it actually was, and I worked within that budget. I knew that no matter how much or how little I make, there are always people who manage to live on less. That fact helped me believe that it was possible. Giving away 10% of my earnings was actually kind of fun. It felt good to have a pot of money from which I could support the causes I cared about. Environmental protection, homeless shelters, GLBTQ causes, anti-racism, education and support for poor women and children, and so on. Shauna and I still use this method, and because we have this little pot of money, we can say yes to some of the one-on-one solicitations that come our way as well. The child doing a Terry Fox run, the university student raising funds for a local environmental group, the Healing Our World project run by our congregation. When a homeless man asked me for money outside of a Starbucks a few months ago, I was able to take him inside and buy him coffee and a muffin. I could do all of that without any anxiety because it was already in the budget. And I could experience the pleasure of giving, which does have a heart-opening effect on me. The 80-10-10 rule works really well for me, but I recognize that in terms of spiritual practice, it's sort of cheating. I'm not really growing. I'm not really embracing the uncertainty of life with arms wide open. I'm not letting go of control at all. I heard my wife laugh. I've just put a controlled structure around my finances that allows me a manufactured sense of openness and freedom. Still, as a stepping stone, it works well for me. It does allow me to feel that open-hearted joy of giving. I do enjoy giving. Friends of mine in Montana recently added twins to their family. They already had a 3-year-old. Since I couldn't offer them help in person, I did some research and gave them a choice of funding either professional house cleaning or a meal delivered by a local farm-to-table restaurant. They chose the meal and got grandparent childcare so that they could enjoy a date night out. I was so pleased to be able to give them that bit of respite. I bet each of you have done things like that. Whether it costs money or not, think of a time that you got or made a gift for someone that was just so perfect you couldn't wait for them to receive it. Do you remember that feeling? For me, it feels like my heart expands. It's an open, happy feeling, a loving feeling. I think it's good for my spirit. It helps me to move into a more generous way of being. Case in point, last winter, I gave away my hoards of hotel hand cream to our collection for Out of the Rain shelter. Baby steps. Also, with my money anxiety held at bay by budget and the 80-10-10 rule, I find I'm more able to be in touch with a sense of gratitude. I often recall something that my mother told me when I was a teenager. She grew up in modest circumstances. Her father worked for a railroad. Her mother was a beautician and then a homemaker. The family lived in a one floor of a duplex flat in a Chicago neighborhood where the other Bohemian immigrants had also settled. My mother was then able to go to university and eventually get her PhD in space physics. Her and my stepfather's careers in academia landed them in a financial tier above what she had known as a child. As an adult, she had nicer, more expensive things, furniture, home decor, clothing. What I remember is that she told me that she felt like a temporary steward of what she has. Like everything she has is just temporarily in her custody. She enjoys it while she has it, but she doesn't feel any sense of clinging or possession. Grounded in a knowledge that she could live on less if she needed, she holds it in open-handed appreciation and gratitude. There's the spiritual practice. Recall the envy and guilt I mentioned earlier? Gratitude is the way out of both. No matter how much you have, there is always someone who has more and someone who has less. Whenever I begin to envy someone who has more, I pull myself back from that edge and remind myself of those who have less. I felt this acutely a couple of years ago when reading our daughter the Canadian Girl series of historical novels. We read about a Francophone girl who lived in Montreal in the 1880s. An African-American girl whose family escaped slavery and settled in Nova Scotia in the 1780s. A Métis girl who lived on the plains in the 1870s. The characters in these books pump water from wells, clean clothes with washing boards, and use bedpans and outhouses. Over the several months we read those books, I felt such a deep gratitude for indoor plumbing. Clean water that comes right out of the tap in the sink, it's like a miracle. Knowing that many people live without this luxury even now, in 2014, makes me feel even more fortunate. I could feel guilty about this privilege. I have in the past. But I've come to believe that wallowing in that kind of guilt is just not useful. So I push through the guilt to the other side. Gratitude. I'm just lucky that I was born in this time period into this particular life of privilege with clean water, indoor plumbing, a home in which to raise our children relatively safe from violence and fear. I feel grateful for these unearned blessings. And when I dwell in that gratitude enough, I find my heart does open, and I'm happy to share the blessings. I'm lucky to have the 80% we have, and I'm happy to give back to the world 10%. Of course, the 10% is a relatively random number. If you grew up Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, you may recognize the idea from the Hebrew scriptures. In English, we use the word tithe. It usually means giving 10% to your faith tradition, and it has at some points in history been taken as payment to those who govern the land. But I like to think of the concept more broadly, giving 10% of what you have back to the greater good. You don't have to be religious to do this. The greater good comes in many forms. Unitarian Universalists are generally committed to so many of these good causes that there has emerged a unique concept of the Unitarian tithe. Instead of giving 10% to the church, as do many Christians, many Unitarian Universalists, including myself and Shauna, give 5% to the church and 5% to other worthy nonprofits. You'll notice that we talk about giving to the church in terms of percentage and not amount. This is so that the generous gift of someone who makes little can be equally valued as the gift of someone who makes a lot. We value all kinds of diversity here, including economic diversity. There is also no set fee to be a member here. Unitarian Universalist congregations are entirely self-funded and gratefully receive whatever anyone wants to give. At pledge time, when we build the budget for the next calendar year, those of you who are official members and friends will be asked to simply consider giving the most generous gift that you can afford, a gift that makes you feel good. For this year's pledge drive, the generosity team has chosen the theme of building connections and has arranged for members and friends to receive one-on-one visits. They will bring you your pledge card for 2015 and will answer any questions, but the bulk of the conversation will be about your experience with this congregation. As I told a group of visiting stewards earlier this week, I am so excited for them to have these conversations with you, because they will get to hear directly from you, from a whole bunch of you, what matters most to you about this church. I hear anecdotally why church matters to various people. The new person who found spiritual insight and meaningful connections in her covenant group. The parent who is so grateful to have their teenager in our classes about healthy sexuality. The adult child of a deceased parishioner who is moved by the level of care and love that goes into the memorial service and reception that honors his mother's life. I hear anecdotally why this congregation matters to people, but the visiting stewards are going to get to talk to all of you, and you'll get a chance to write your answers on an index card that we then display with everyone else's answers. I wonder what you will say. What does matter to you about this Unitarian Universalist community? What ways have you been involved in this congregation that you found most rewarding, most enjoyable, or meaningful? What has moved you? What has helped you grow? What are you glad we do together for others? Reverend Shauna and I very much look forward to reading what you have to say. I was thinking about why this faith tradition matters to me. And what occurs to me is how I felt when my little baby niece was born. I didn't yet have any children of my own, and I was so excited about being an aunt. I went a little nuts with the baby gifts. It was just such a joy to invest in this little life, this new person. I felt deeply then what I still feel now. Each new life has such potential to do good in the world, just by being who they are. A baby smiles and the world is a better place. It is especially easy for me to see this in kids, but all people have this potential, really. Every person has their own unique way of touching the world, of caring for this planet we share. And this is what we are about in our UU congregations. We welcome each person in as their authentic selves. We support one another as we discern and practice our own unique ways of caring for this world. We combine our efforts and make a bigger difference together. Investing in our UU movement feels to me like investing in the potential of each precious, unique person here and all the ways in which each of you touch the wider world. That's what matters to me about what we do in our Unitarian Universalist congregations. There are specific things that matter to me, too. For example, I was thrilled when our congregation raised pledges enough last year to fund a new assistant for our children and youth programs. I love working with Faye. I love how she has helped our kids' programs thrive, and I'm delighted that she now has the support she needs. This year, the goal of the generosity team has set out for us is to raise the total amount of pledges for 2015 by $20,000. For those of you who like math, those of you also in the grocery store with your calculators, that's 100 people increasing by 200 each, which works out to be an increase of just over $16 per month. Or we could get there if 200 people increased by 100 each annually, which would be an increase of just over $8 per month. If we raise pledges by that 20,000, we will be able to continue some of the experiments we tried this past year, will be able to pay the fee that allows Reverend Shauna to maintain her presence and connections as a chaplain at University of Victoria. We'll be able to get these fantastic new small group program materials that we can use for delving into our monthly themes in a deep and personal way. Keep an ear out for the program called Soul Matters in January. We'll also be able to invest in much needed professional tech support for office and AV systems, support that will promote rentals, reduce wasted office hours, and ease the strain on our hardworking AV volunteers. Also, as a budget enthusiast, I must admit that I'm really excited about the fact that we are moving forward on a plan to sustain our buildings over the long term, putting money aside now so that we are not shocked and destitute when a heat pump blows or a roof leaks. The roof is leaking in the farmhouse, that's why I mentioned that. If we meet our goal this year, we will be able to take a good step in that direction. Property, outreach, programs, support for staff and volunteers, these are all aspects of our church that matter to me. It's all smaller bits that support our larger mission. But if I had to write just one thing on a card for our wall, one thing that exemplifies what matters to me about what we do here, I think I would write about the Sunday service that we did a year and a bit ago. It was the culmination of the Youth Credo program, many of you were there, in which the youth shared with us their beliefs. They articulated their theologies, their values, their sense of spirituality. They talked about moments in which they had felt connected to the larger whole, whether that was human community, the web of life, the spirit of love and life. They talked about their desire to walk in the world with compassion and care. Often these sorts of services are mostly attended by the families of the kids involved, but this service was attended by everyone, all generations, related and unrelated. Everyone took our young people seriously. In fact, afterwards, many of our older members told me that listening to these thoughtful, articulate, and caring souls gave them hope. They left that service with a sense that the world was in good hands. That's what opens my heart. What opens yours?